want to do the intro? You want me to do the intro?
Go ahead, buddy. You have more energy than I do.
Hello. I don't know about that. All right. Hello and welcome, everybody, to another exciting episode of One Side is Always Right, the debate, the friendly debate podcast, where we try to prove that one side isn't always necessarily right, but we have a lot of fun in the process of deciding which side is wrong. Except for in this case, where Thomas will 100% be wrong because he's been given the losing position.
Yeah, I got the bad one. I think a little bit of housekeeping as well from the last podcast we did is I'm going to try to mute myself when I vape so no one has to listen to me sucking the fat vape cock while we record this.
That sounds like a wise strategy, unless you forget to unmute and then, you know, we lose your beautiful point that you were going to make.
and probably our subscribers too. We had 16 whole subscribers, 16 whole downloads from last time, 8 of which are probably us at the very least.
And, I didn't download it.
I think download just means listen to.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, then it's probably all us then.
And the topic. What is the topic? Is that what you call it?
I would say the topic for this one is modern art bullshit? Just that question.
That's pretty good.
Does that work for you?
That works perfect. Okay. Yeah, I'm gonna lose either way, so it's absolutely fine.
If you come away from this definitively and objectively proving that modern art is bullshit, then that
I'll change the world.
Well, yeah. I think you probably would change the world.
Artists around the world would give up. Galleries would shut down. Museums would be gone. And I think I got the missing key here.
All right.
And I wasn't able to put together any opening notes for this. I just didn't have the time this morning. So, how about you start out with your position in this, and then I can jump into mine as I work it out in my own head.
All right, fair enough. I was going to throw it back on you to do that, and I could argue against it, but I think this will work. So I'll start this with a little anecdote, which I enjoy telling. When I was 16, I got to visit the MoMA, Museum of Modern Art in New York City, which is probably one of the most famous modern art museums in the world. No big deal. And there was one exhibit that really kind of left an impression on me, I guess you could say. As a teenager, it was an empty room. There was no other art in the room, and the lights turned on and off. So I go into this room and I'm like, huh, that's a, I'm like looking around for the art piece and the lights turning on and off. And I find a little plaque on the wall. And it says, it talks about the piece. It's like each new cycle cancels the next and gives rise to the endless churning of light. It's some kind of philosophical, metaphysical bullshit about how this light turning on and off is like a metaphor for everything or something like that. And at the time I was like, holy shit, you've got to be kidding me. Like any artist would kill to have like a small fraction of this gallery space. Like how could this guy take up an entire room in one of the most famous museums in the world and just turn the lights on and off? So I thought that was bullshit. I was like, at the time, as a teenager, I was like, that's fucking bullshit. Modern art is bullshit. The art is literally just in that little plaque where you justify what you've done as art. But in reality, all you're doing is turning the lights on and off in a room in the museum. That being said, as an adult, you know, I disagree with that. I actually now would take the position that that's fairly brilliant. And the fact that he was able to get that much space in, you know, one of the best modern art museums in the world is a testament to this guy's creativity and ingenuity as an artist. The other thing I realized, do you think I remember any of the other pieces I saw that day in the museum? No, I don't. I remember that one. That's the one that stuck with me, and I was mad about it. But like I said, now I think that that's actually fairly brilliant. And I think it's important to realize that not anybody could just do that. I couldn't call up MoMA and say, hey, I want to turn the lights on and off in one of your rooms. Can you give me like $1 million to do that or whatever? No, you have to build yourself up as an artist to be able to do things as abstract and as minimal as that. But so my position for today is that that's absolutely valid and in many ways an actually pretty brilliant work of art. It might not be everyone's cup of tea, but it's enough people's cup of tea that it has real value, as do similar kind of abstract minimalist pieces of work.
Yeah, that's a great summation. And I think I can cultivate my point to be opposite of that in some way. I think after doing the hour of research that I had this morning, this is how maybe I can condense my overall argument. I don't know if modern art is bullshit. What I will say is it's inaccessible for not just the average layperson in terms of interpretation, but also for the artists themselves, as they're often left out of participating in galleries and collectors because they are the arbiters of the value for those pieces. And I have a few points on that today. I think more than that, I think that modern art in a way is almost like the coloring book version of questions and answers about the nature of reality and existentialism. Whereby the questions and answers that it poses are, it's a bad medium for that in particular. It's not cohesive and it's open to interpretation in a way that is now completely convoluted. That being said, I think there's value in art insofar as there is an emotional reaction to it. And we can dive into that a little bit further. So there's value in a democratic sense by emotional response from the user. But overall, it's completely overshadowed by the art industry itself, and the modern art that we see is propped up in inaccessible and shitty ways by art collectors to line their own pockets.
That is, yeah, that's an interesting point. This is starting like with some very cohesive debate-like energy, so I think it's would be good if we can kind of take it off the rails a little bit more in our true you know, style of just rambling on, but that I think it's so far it sounds really professional and good. I think that what the last thing you said probably is a good place to start, maybe, because the valuation of art in terms of art collectors and, you know, the price of art pieces does seem outwardly pretty fucking ridiculous to an average Joe. In my research, I was seeing various examples of white canvases, or one was a blank canvas that has a few slashes down it that sold for over $1 million. So it is easy to say that seems unreasonable, but it's complicated, and I don't know that much about the art world, but I do know that like artists have to build their careers and reputations, you know. So that guy probably had a lot. There was probably a lot that led up to him being able to sell a piece of art with slashes in it for over $1 million. Whether that's fair or not kind of gets into questions about, you know, why anything is worth more, like a pop song or whatever. You know, it's like, why do some artists make millions of dollars where other talented artists just don't? You know, and is there a reason why that's uniquely? I guess a question to you would be, is it uniquely worse in the modern art world to pay over $1 million for a fucking white square versus, you know, I don't know, say like, you know, Ariana Grande making however many millions she does from her most recent thing? You know, is it because more people can appreciate the pop song and the abstract piece of art is much more niche, like weird rich art collectors are the ones that pay for that?
Yeah. And I think it's a pretty interesting, there's a pretty interesting difference between, say, a CD sold for Gen Pop versus a piece of art that is going to be purchased or auctioned from a gallery. One being that this is an exclusive club that is able to determine the value of a particular piece of art. This is not a democratic process. This is a process made up by the gallery and the elite collectors as a part of that. There are actually these pretty shady practices by galleries in general as the arbiters of the value, right, and the collectors themselves that really give rise to some questions. So because the value is typically made from an argument of authority, from these collectors as well as these galleries, you end up with these really fucking weird practices. So they're not just ascribing the value, but determining what that art is. Often those purchasers at those auctions even are just purchasing at a particular bid to increase their other collection of that artist. People are turned down from purchasing the art who are not prestigious enough, and they change the value based on the purchaser itself. So it is not an inherent value that they've ascribed to this piece of art. For instance, Daniel Radcliffe was turned down from buying a particular painting from a gallery because they're waiting for a more prestigious buyer, and we're ascribing a different value to it at that point as well.
Hold on, more prestigious than Harry Potter? Are you?
Yeah,
I don't know about that, dude.
They're pretty shady practice. They even do something called outside of galleries where they just tell you, hey, here's a price, you have to buy it. And even then, they're telling people different prices to see how much they can get off of this thing to increase the value of their other collections from that artist. But they also do something even in like bidding, like chandelier auctions, where they just point and they pretend that someone else behind them has made a higher bid. Been well documented. They'll pay people to bid to increase the pricing of those particular pieces of art. I mean, none of this sounds to me like they're trying to genuinely represent the inherent value of that piece of art to their bidders, the eventual buyer who may also be colluding, or the general public at large. So it just seems like a really weird thing. And I guess there's a propensity to go, okay, well, hey, these are just maybe they are the arbiters of the value that something gets sold for. This is not modern art as a whole. But it's interesting because these guys are determining in some way what art is and what artists pursue and which artists even get to live and continue their art, which is pretty shitty because a lot of the artists that we see in these galleries are not the best at their particular field, but they are the most marketable. Which again, it feels like a weird discrepancy between what I've been told art should be, knowing nothing about art. But I just blather on a lot, so I'm gonna pass it back to you, see if you have thoughts.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, it's interesting how any value gets assigned to something like art. And I guess it seems like it's inevitable that this would build up as long as sort of rich people have enjoyed art, you know, and the meaning of art has changed a lot over the years. You know, back in the day, perhaps people in a similar social class would have been paying for portraits made of them because that was the only way they could have their likeness preserved. And for a while, you know, in the Renaissance, that was one of the main functions of art. And it was very tightly controlled with like the art academy and who gets to graduate as an artist. I mean, without going into too much detail, because again, my research was a few weeks back, but it's, you know, during that time period, there were very rigorous standards for what passed as art. And some of the sort of, you know, expressionism and abstract expressionism and modern art that came after that, after the kind of Renaissance and neoclassical periods, was a reaction against that. And, you know, another point that I heard made was that since the advent of photography, you know, the function of art doesn't need to be to make realistic depictions of something. And that's not, you know, painting doesn't really hold that place in society. Whereas before it was like, yeah, if you want to be remembered, you got to get someone to make a painting of you. Then you go further back in art history and, you know, you can see how it's changed. And a lot of times it was done for religious reasons and stuff. But we live in an era where art is, I mean, not to just sound like this is my cliched argument, but art can be whatever you want it to be, right? It can serve almost any function in a lot of different ways. And I mean, I think in order to look at art objectively at all, to say that this kind of, you know, upholds these values, you have to ascribe some kind of goal to it. So if I wanted to draw a picture of you that was as realistic as possible, you could very easily objectively measure how much I succeeded on that. You know, you could say like proportions, the anatomy, the lighting, you could go through all this, you know. And when I was in art school and I was learning about those things, I got angry when people didn't you know, when it was just like, oh, like, well, you didn't have, you don't, you're not even trying to learn those skills. You're just saying, you're just like splattering some paint on a canvas and saying like, well, this is my art. So how can you judge it? It was interesting though, kind of jumping back into sort of the lead up into kind of where we are today. I think Jackson Pollock is probably like the most famous example of some of these types of things, because he was such a famous painter and a lot of people were really enamored by him as a character, as a person, as the place, you know, the place that he existed in art history. But he wasn't the only person doing that kind of art at that time. Like the movement was called abstract expressionism. There was lots of people splattering paint and doing these kind of washed canvases and stuff. But he became friends with an art critic who really helped sell his career, you know? So on the one hand, you could say, well, he just got lucky and it was just bullshit because he found this guy who loved his work, who was prominent in the art world and really promoted his work over other people who were trying to do similar things. But I mean, he was also a really interesting character. I mean, he has a place in American history, I think, for a reason, because he, for various reasons, did something at a certain time that worked. And I would say the same thing about the lights switching on and off. For whatever reason, and I looked it up, that piece was actually done at a bunch of other museums, too. It's one of the guy's most famous pieces. And for whatever reason, you know, that worked at that time. But I guess my question back to you would be, if you took money out of it, and you said that, like, I don't know what the method would be to getting in galleries. It gets kind of complicated without some kind of financial incentive. But let's say there's a more democratic process. It's something a little bit more crowdsourced, a little less elitist, and similar art pieces are still rising. Because I think that no matter what, you're going to have modern art, because abstract, minimal, that type of art has always been a reaction against what was originally held up as the standard of, like, you know, Renaissance art that's just realism. Would you still make the argument that some of it is bullshit if it didn't have to do with money? If it wasn't for the fact that people are paying millions of dollars for these paintings, would you still say some of these pieces really are kind of bullshit?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I actually played that thought experiment in my own head. You know, taking the monetary incentive out of art, you know, what is art if it has ascribed intention, if it is purposeful? And I think they're probably two ways you could democratize the value of art or measuring the value of art. And it probably come, and I think they're probably inextricably tied as well. So one, I think, is emotional response. People pay for emotional responses. People gauge the value of something based on emotional responses often, as long as they are purposeful. I.e. yelling at someone like gets a emotional response out of them, but it's not art. And I think the second is impelling to action. People used to say this about Johann Goethe a lot, who was a poet, like a German romantic poet. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they thought was really interesting about his art in particular was that it impelled people to action. You know, we see this all the time, mm-hmm. like social causes. And I think they're tied because obviously you need an emotional response like happiness, sadness, curiosity to then inspire or impel social change or change a belief structure of a person. Mm-hmm. And I did send you a study before this. I didn't dive super deep into that about ways they measure an emotional response. I think that's probably the best way to measure the value in a democratic sense of a piece of art non-monetarily. In that sense, I think modern art can obviously do that. You look at a Jackson Pollock painting and you can feel the frenzy and the amount of energy that's in that painting. And yeah. You don't need a description of what's happening there. It's looking, I think a quote I heard is like, you know, it's no longer looking at the art and asking what it is. The art's looking back at you and asking, what do you stand for? Nice. I think that can be powerful. What I think it does really poorly at, and what modern art in a broad sense typically says it's doing, is tackling large issues and complicated complicated topics, either about the nature of reality or the nature of human consciousness, which I just think it does poorly. I think their messages and their answers are convoluted. You see that dude who, like, you know, put a chair in the museum, drew the picture of the chair next to it, had the dictionary definition of a chair next to it, and it's like, what is a chair?
But layers, yes.
But we've been talking about chairs and like what their metaphysical representation have been like since Plato. And they did Plato did a fucking better job at asking what a chair was than this dude who's posing this open-ended question with no sort of conclusion. It really does feel like the coloring book version of a book of philosophy. Like, these guys think they are so smart.
Too obvious.
Yeah, they think they're so smart. They're like, what's a chair? And maybe the topic has been expounded upon. You have really deep, interesting insights that are communicated through words and through written word in particular that they have no access to communicate themselves and don't have the knowledge to do so either. And that's where I think modern art's failing for me, not in the emotional response and impelling to action that good art can do, even advertising, but they're saying nothing of value.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, I think I definitely would grant that, like, some pieces can get lost in, like, you know, I think it's easy to find a piece that's overly conceptual and that's just not very good. It's just like, you know, it makes sense what they're trying to say, but the piece itself didn't elicit that reaction by looking at it, you know. But you also can't have a piece that does that universally, you know. I mean, I think there are some good examples. Maybe, are you familiar with Mark Rothko?
No.
Yeah, Google him real quick just so you can see what I'm talking about. But like, he was famous for fairly minimalist work. It's just these colorscapes. But I think if you look at it, it's hard to say that doesn't elicit a pretty emotional response because the colors are so deep. This is where we need Jamie to have to pull up the but he also has a crazy story, and he apparently, as he was kind of spiraling into depression on his way to killing himself, started just doing black canvases and eventually committed suicide, which is kind of crazy. But I mean, Rothko is a super famous artist, and like, I would say that a lot of people have tried probably to do similar stuff. I mean, if you look at it right now, what's your initial reaction? Would you say, this is kind of just color? Or do you, as a quote unquote lay person, kind of see the emotional response out of these really rich color squares?
Yeah. I mean, it's tough to say how much I'm even influenced knowing that this is art, which is a tough thing to
a really good point. Yeah.
But the colors are brilliant. They're very strong. I think you could admire a building painted in some of these colors for standing out. I don't know how much meaning I can ascribe from these, though, other than, you know, the smallest amount of shock value based on its brilliance of color.
Yeah. Well, you brought up probably like a really important point in all of this that I've heard discussed, I think, in a philosophy podcast before. I mean, I'm sure lots of people have written at this at length, is that you can't view any art without its cultural context. That's not actually possible to do. And leads us back to everything we've been talking about, because these cultural contexts are increasingly complicated. I mean, always have been complicated, but in today's world, there's so much variation and variety. You can't look at a piece of art without thinking about the person who did it or the context you're seeing it in. If I turned the lights on and off in one of my rooms and invited my friends to come see my art show, and they were like, Corey, what are you doing? And I was like, no, this is the art piece. They'd be like, what the fuck? But because I saw that art piece in a gallery, it contextualized it in a way that challenged me, that was interesting to me. You know, I was like, this is literally a room in a prestigious art gallery where that's being done. Likewise with any of these pieces, if they were good enough to be in a museum, and again, you say good, which is completely an arbitrary term, but if the powers that be in the art world and the connections and the reputation that these artists had allowed them to be placed into galleries, that automatically gives them some kind of status, right? It's really interesting. Like, how do you untangle that to even be able to ask questions about, like, how do you find that, to put it another way, how do you find that kind of like unknown artist that's really brilliant if somebody hasn't, I don't know, told you they're brilliant? You know, what if your friend is amazing and you like, you want to promote their work, but then, then the last thing I'll say, sorry, is that then you also have the additional layer of them being your friend. So you're biased to think their work is maybe better than it is because you like them as a person.
Yeah. And I think that's maybe where a lot of people feel like modern art is bullshit because it does require an interpreter. It requires an argument of authority, which is not something that we like to rely on when determining our own values or coming up with our own opinions about art pieces. And I think one thing that modern art is really subject to is people just saying it is bullshit because there is an ascribed value from either an interpreter, i.e. like the gallery, or the artist themselves. When really, yeah, the explanation might be bullshit, but maybe just don't like the art. And those two get conflated really easily because you have this extra layer of bullshit of, you know, a lofty interpretation provided by the artist themselves. Like you could buy into, you could not like this piece of art that we're looking at from Mark Rothko, but jump from not being a fan of it to this is fucking bullshit based on the a poor argument of authority or a poor interpretation of the product itself. Which I think is really weird.
And do you think that, like, I mean, I wonder how often it happens that way versus the opposite of that, where, I mean, I think for me, maybe just because I like art and I'm like always open to trying to even art that I initially see and I don't like, there's part of me that wants to try and find why people like it or whatever. You know, to me, it's, I feel like it's more like I might be like, oh, I don't really get this. And then somebody points something out about it or shows me some extra detail, some layer of meaning. I'm like, oh, that is actually kind of cool. But you're feeling that, like, you know, other people, maybe less artistically minded people, would just resist and continue to resist, which is kind of what I did as a teenager when I found that light switching piece. As I read the explanation, I got more angry about it. I mean, I don't know. I think I saw a statistic about like 70 or 80% of the populace that they, you know, like when they did some survey said they don't understand modern art, you know? So you kind of feel like a lot of people fall into that category where they're just going to kind of resist anybody trying to tell them that this is art and trying to justify why it's art.
Yeah, or at least buying into the specific interpretation or claim of this is what it represents.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to, and art might be unique in that way. Like it's, I think it'd be hard to say that about a lot of other things.
Yeah.
Because it is so subjective, because now you're applying a very subjective interpretation from the artists themselves. You understand there is an underlying, there's like an underlying motivation from that artist to make it seem lofty, to be able to sell it at a higher price. It's easier to ascribe a bullshit title to them. But what I think you did bring up about the history of art, the context of the culture of that art piece is really important to its interpretation and to understanding it holistically and its, and perhaps its value even. I am curious, from your perspective, can something be considered art if it was not mindfully crafted as art?
That's a nice question. So it was not sort of, so yeah, I think it's a really good question. Like if somebody, like say you got a blank piece of canvas and splattered paint all over it, and you literally just did it to prove a point to me, right? Like for whatever reason, you know, and then somehow you convinced somebody it was like a famous art piece, you sold it or whatever, you got it in the gallery, you had some like positive result, even though you're in no way an artist with no artistic background. Would that cheapen it for me? And yeah, it probably would to a certain extent. It is a really interesting question. Like if something is meant created mindfully, but I think that like, I mean, it's a slippery slope, right? It's like everything has some intention behind it. Where do I want to go with this? I think that if you have an objective with your art, like I said before, you can evaluate art objectively if you have a specific goal in mind for that piece of art. And you know, when I was younger, I thought about going to school for illustration. And I always felt that like to be an illustrator, to be a professional illustrator, you really do need a lot of skills that can all be objectively evaluated. You know, like there's a lot of objective criteria that goes into creating professional illustration, perspective, anatomy, color, lighting, and all these things are very easy to measure objectively. And you can look at amateur illustrators, you can look at professional illustrators and see a very sharp difference, you know? And if you want to be something like, say, like a concept artist for movies or video games, you really have to have a lot of these skills nailed so that you can work quickly and you can, you know, when somebody tells you their idea for what they want this character to look like, you can, you know, you can do it with all these tools that you've built up. And there's part of me that feels like that, like artists should have those skills. I think it's especially a really good example of it is Picasso. You know, you look at some Picasso's art and it's like, whoa, that's fucking weird. But then you look at his early stuff and it's like beautiful Renaissance, like clip. He's completely classically trained. And he, you know, he learned all the rules and he consciously decided to break them. And I think you can say that that's a good thing for artists to be able to do across almost any medium. You know, like I used to be in a band. For any of our podcast listeners who didn't know, I used to be in a band. I was pretty cool back then. Band's called Wild English. Check it out on Spotify, as well as download this episode. And I'm not a great musician. I mean, I like technically speaking, I don't, you know, I can play guitar. I can play like, you know, your general guitar chords. I can kind of noodle around and do something that sounds kind of like a guitar solo. You know, I'm not a great singer. I'm better than I was. And I was able to produce what I thought was like a passable kind of local Seattle, you know, indie rock sound. Like you can make certain types of art without being like classically trained, just like you can play in a rock band without being a classically trained guitarist, you know. But I mean, I would feel that it would always be better to be able to have a certain foundation of classical skills so that anytime you're doing something really simple, like, hey, I'm playing this four chord song, or I'm making this abstract painting with like a dot on the canvas, but I could paint a super detailed, realistic scene. I could do a, you know, classical piece on my guitar. I think that would be a benefit for almost any artist to be as technically sound as you possibly can be so that you can break the rules and simplify things as a matter of choice, not out of necessity. That being said, I think there's a lot of artists who, you know, have a limited range of technical abilities, and I don't think it disqualifies them from making really profound works of art. So, I mean, I think I went a little off topic of your question, but I mean, it's tough. Like you definitely can't disqualify someone, and sometimes you can't even tell how good they really are if it's just, you know, something so abstract. But I've known people that I thought weren't that great of artists that are trying, like, I definitely think I've known people who I don't consider very like technically good artists who are kind of skating by on shit that is abstract enough that it can't be evaluated with that criteria.
Yeah. No, I think that's interesting. And I perhaps this is where people fall into the camp of intention, obviously is a very important for people interpreting that art. Mm-hmm. Because they want to understand that there was, say, intention in the chaos and broad strokes they painted, mm-hmm. because that artist totally could do that classical painting. They could do in a, like, what do they call impressionist? Is that one the one where they try to mimic real life?
Impressionism is like, it's like Van Gogh or like Monet. It's still fairly realistic, but it is the little kind of dots of color. So it's like, I mean, I've heard arguments made that in some ways expressionism has more emotion in it than pure realism because there's a blurring of the lines and the light,
yeah.
Like the, you know, the classic example is like the water lilies and the light on the water. And it's almost like more beautiful than a realistic interpretation of it. And then from impressionism, you get into more abstract shit. And like Jackson Pollock is considered like abstract expressionism. Whereas I think traditional expressionism of like, there's also like post-expressionism, but getting a little far afield with that. But like Van Gogh and those people are like kind of edging away from realism, but there's still like a tie back to like light and shadow and that kind of stuff.
All right. I mean, you can, I guess you could see the, similar representations of expressionism in things like photography. They're jacking up saturations, you know, world design in video games. They're exaggerating certain features that the world has to make it more visually interesting and more engaging for the user, eliciting a larger response because it is unfamiliar in terms of its visual aspect or something. You know, I don't know where that cutoff is, right? Here's the thing that annoys me about this conversation, is because I think that modern art can elicit a larger emotional response than representations of nature, or of a scene or of a fucking apple on a table. And I don't know if that has to do with the contextual lens of I've seen this before. I know what art could be. I know how weird it could be. And it's not expressive or shocking enough. But it can elicit more of an emotional response. And from that video you sent over prior to this podcast, I guess that was the intention, is moving away from a representation of the world and more of a representation of the emotional interpretation of the world. So I think it's really good in that way. I guess when it starts devolving into shapes and forms that no longer you could attribute to something a human has seen before or could interpret in any way other than the artist's interpretation given to you, or sometimes they don't even give you that. They're just like, it's up to you. You go, well, what the fuck am I looking at? What am I doing here? If I'm just trying to mentally masturbate to understand your interpretation of your arts, your like little strokes on the paper, or I have to rely on an argument of authority from someone who I trust knows more about this than I do, who I guess on the gallery side and the collector side are lining their pockets and trying to inflate the value of these pieces, who have an ulterior motive in all cases. And I think that's where it becomes really difficult as a layperson to go, this is not total and utter bullshit. Even if it can potentially elicit emotional response, there's no impelling to action. I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with that argument is that there's just there's nowhere to like draw these lines, right? Like, there's nowhere to say where it like crosses over, unless you can say that, like, you know, like I've just seen this done so many times, or this idea just seems like really contrived and it's boring, because, you know, then you could say for me personally, this doesn't really work. But I mean, the question of authority is interesting, but I mean, as it stands now, there's, you know, the only way for art to make it into these galleries is with some kind of authority presenting it to you. I think the problem again is like when you follow art history, I think it does kind of help you appreciate, because, you know, in the Renaissance, none of these things we're describing would have been considered art. No one would even have entertained the idea of like an empty room or this abstract blank canvas as being art. It would have been an absolute joke, right? And then you follow art history through these movements and you see it getting more and more abstract to the point where we are now, where you have almost, you could go through any layer of abstraction, and you could go as conceptual as you want or as completely non-conceptual. I did have a thing once where I was like, kind of back to my sort of a starting anecdote about this, of like where I felt like artists shouldn't have to write statements to their art, right? Like I was like, that should be disqualifying. If you need to write a statement to make people appreciate it, that's bullshit. But then now that I look at it, I'm like, why? Like, why could that not be part of the art, the statement? Is just as valid as any other choice you make about your art. You could have zero statement, you could have an abstract statement with just a bunch of random gobbledygook typed in it, and people like try and read it, and they're like, oh, that's kind of weird. And they look back at the piece and they're like, I don't know, maybe the emotion they wanted was to confuse people. Maybe the emotion they wanted were for people to legitimately hate their art. I think art's gotten to the point where a gallery could put a really bad piece of art in there to make people angry about it. And that, you could easily argue, is actually a brilliant piece of art because it made people angry because they saw it. Do you remember a few years ago, there was this controversy. An artist took a starving dog and chained it to the wall of an art gallery. No joke. I did try to look up more details about this, and nobody really knows what happened, whether the dog was like allowed to starve to death, but it was like blown up all over the internet. And sure, that you could say that piece of art like crosses a line because it's animal cruelty. Would you say that's art, or do you say that's not art? They took it, and again, it was not supposed to make a, apparently the artist wanted to do two things, kind of make people upset and also say that, like, point out that a lot of people came to the museum and didn't do anything about it. They didn't try to save the dog. They just went and saw this, like, whoa, that's crazy. And then just kind of like became bystanders in this potentially fucked up thing. Like, I mean, that is all within the realm of art, whether or not you think the dog thing was going too far. I feel like I legitimately feel like I could take a shit on a plate and put it in an art gallery and that would be art. It would be really gross art, but I would still defend that as a valid piece of art.
Yeah. And I guess, I mean, this really does have to come down to the intention of the artist and believing or trusting that the intention is the same as the interpretation by the Gen Pop.
No, I don't think it needs to be. I think some artists would be happy if their intention did not match with the interpretation that they get from it.
Why?
I think that as soon as art goes out into the world, it changes. The context of art changes from when an artist is working on it by themselves to when as soon as the public starts seeing it. That changes what the art is immediately as soon as it's released, as soon as it's viewed by people. And a lot of people have played with this tension in like performance pieces and stuff. But I don't think you can say that the intention needs to match the result. I think some artists, or even a lot of artists, would like that to happen, and they create art with that in mind. But I also think a lot of artists aren't attached to that as an outcome.
But does that not, I guess this is where, like, the video you sent me, the idea is that, what did they call it, aesthetic relativism? That now it is completely in the interpretation of the viewer, and there is perhaps even no explanation or interpretation from the artists themselves. How much does not having the intention and purposeful making of that art degrade the art itself? Even in the video you sent me, the professor of art or whatever had shown his students a quote-unquote Jackson Pollock painting that was actually just a dirty apron.
Yeah, his studio apron, right.
And they had, you know, ascribed a lot of value and interpretation to that piece itself. You know, does art require purposeful creation in order to be art? Or does that rock that's sitting in the Los Angeles Museum of Modern Art that was created by no human but simply picked up and placed in space constitute art as well?
That video is funny. Well, you know that. Do you know about PragerU? That it's like a conservative, like, propaganda machine.
Yeah.
You know? So I thought it was interesting that it's like, of course, these fucking assholes, because this doesn't even have to necessarily do with politics. So I thought it was weird that one of their videos is explaining how the art world has been ruined by like fucking liberal, you know, like I was like, oh my God, I can't believe they haven't, like, it's kind of like the Ayn Rand thing, you know, where it's like objectivity is really important and everything needs to be objective and all this fucking postmodern liberal bullshit just doesn't have any, like, you know, which isn't true. Lots of postmodernism and even lots of like abstract art does have objective things that they talk about and they think about. It's like, but to go to that specific point, I remember that point he made about the stone. He's like, this is just a fucking rock, they just dug it up. But no, the art is taking that rock from where it was and placing it in the museum. The art is that. The art is the idea to use that specific rock, and then the process of, you know, bringing it and mounting it in the museum and putting something into a new context. That's the art. It doesn't matter that it's just a rock. What matters is that the intention was to place it in the new context, and it turns it into art. I would 100% defend that.
If that rock was left in its original resting place and someone stuck up a sign next to that rock and said, this is my art, is that still art?
Yeah, 100%. It's Why? Completely valid because they put a sign there. And again, you might hate it. It might be really stupid. Like, I mean, and that's a subjective judgment. But if I saw that, I might be like, this is stupid. This, somebody just tried to make this rock into art by putting a sign. But it's totally art because they chose that rock and they made a sign with whatever materials they used to make a sign, even if they literally just printed it out from their computer and taped it on there with fucking duct tape and looked ghetto as fuck, it's still art. And that's where this, and this is where you get this kind of relativism thing. It's like, I would be tempted to call it bad art because I don't like it. And I think that if they, let's do two scenarios on this. One, they literally typed the default font of Microsoft Word on an 8.5 by 11, went out to the rock and taped it on there with masking tape, the blue masking tape on a nice looking rock. And you're like, okay, you're claiming this is your art. Fine. It is art of some form. And then another thing, they make a really nice sign and they like actually put it into the ground and it's kind of like positioned in a way that it catches your eye off the path and it draws your attention to the rock. And you're like, it's kind of a cool rock. Doesn't have a shitty fucking piece of paper taped to it anymore. I mean, both of those I would defend as valid art pieces. One of them I might like more than the other, personally, at least. And I think a lot of people would share that sentiment. But are they both art? Unfortunately, yeah. Fortunately or unfortunately, yes, I would say so.
Well, that's interesting. So the way, as a non-artist, that I interpret art, or a definition of art, because I'd be curious to hear your definition after this, is that any medium that could be interpreted by a human that elicits emotion that was in some way, you must have intended to elicit some sort of emotion or meaning from that piece, whether that is music, written word, or a clay pot. And the value is in that emotional response, and the intention has to be in that emotional response. How are you defining art if art is now completely interchangeable with nature, non-intentional or purposeful creation by which to elicit human emotional response?
No, but it's not just nature. I mean, I think art is a hugely broad word that I would struggle to define concisely, because I think that there's so many things. Like, I would be tempted to say art is something that is created without serving a kind of economic purpose or functional purpose, but I'm sure you could find art that does, you know, that does both accomplish an economic purpose and work as a piece of art. I mean, art has been part of human history for almost as long as we know of, right? With cave paintings and stuff. And I think the early cave paintings, what they painted were these animals, because they were looking at these animals and they were remembering the kind of look of these herds and stuff. And so the animals were like more realistic than the humans themselves, because they could see the animals. And it's just grown from there. And art's served so many different purposes and functions throughout its history that you could argue this in a really annoying way. And say that I could say that if I go out to a beautiful piece of, like, a beautiful part of nature, and I just sit and I look at this beautiful scene, and I just look at it and I think about how much I like it, that in some ways, like, just to me, that's like art, because I just loved looking at that. Like, I chose to focus my attention on that thing. And even if I can't recreate it, I think this is right where you would probably say that doesn't count as art, because I was literally just looking at something. But obviously, if I took a picture of it on my phone, you couldn't argue that that's not art, right? Like, I have captured something. I mean, I think that, like, you could define so many things as art. It's almost like it's almost easier to say what doesn't count as art than right. to say what does.
And at this point, I'd be curious what you don't consider art, because it seems like anything is art under this definition, as long as it's interpreted by a human in particular, as long as it's experienced in some way through some sense as a human, it is now art. So it's, a fight with your girlfriend is art in a way, because you've interpreted it and it elicited an emotional response.
Yeah. Is it cheating if I look up the definition of art right now?
No, because I didn't look it up.
Jamie. What's the definition of art? Probably should have known this before. Because the dictionary, let's see, the expression or application of human creative skill and imagination, typically in a visual form such as painting or sculpture, producing works to be appreciated primarily for their beauty or emotional power. So under that definition of art, yeah, you can start, you can say that intention is a good enough way to start to remove things from the category of art. You can say that, well, I had no intention of making this art. I had no intention of showing this to anybody. Therefore, it's not art. I think that's a fine definition if you're trying to categorize things. But it leads us back to this complicated thing about modern art. And, you know, I think anything that has even a hint of intention behind it could be art. Would you say that the code you write is art?
Yeah, I think there's creativity in code.
Yeah.
So by that definition, yeah.
It requires creativity. I mean, you know, you could say any meal you cook, even if you're literally just making some shitty fucking pasta meal just to like feed yourself and you have no like desire to make it culinarily interesting, could still count as art. But
it's intentional. I think probably the value of that art would be measured in its eliciting its emotional response. And more specifically for those pieces, typically good or positive emotional responses.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't, I don't know if you could create the worst meal ever and serve it to people and be like, that's art. It tastes real bad. And do you get it?
Yeah, you got it. The idea was to make it to taste really bad. The art was that I forced you to eat it.
That's what I'm going to tell my girlfriend next time I cook a bad meal. Do you understand? It's charred just like my soul.
Tortured. Is torture art?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's where it comes down to. Like, I think the intention has to be that it is created to elicit an emotional response in a way that inspires action. So, yeah, I think probably could torture be.
It could be art to the people torturing, but it would probably not be art to the person being tortured. It could be art to the person being tortured, but you'd have to be kind of you'd have to probably be a bit of a masochist in that case.
You'd have to appreciate it as art.
Yeah.
I think it would have to be created with the intention of being art and then interpreted as art.
But if you're being 100% tortured and you don't want to be tortured and you're, you know, like you are being tortured, there's a group of people torturing you who love torturing you, and they're talking about all the different methods and the art form of torture, but you are suffering, then, you know, it's like you could argue that invalidates their appreciation of the art because it's at the expense of somebody, and maybe nothing that severely hurts another, you know, entity should be considered art. But I mean, you know, this just kind of is taking us down the philosophical rabbit hole of like, people have made so many definitions over time, and you can set up these little rules, and I'm sure there's like if you delve deep enough, you can maybe get to, you know, this kind of distinction. But like anything that you talk about philosophically, there's not one fixed category. It's a blend of things that kind of cross over into what may be considered art in certain contexts, if that makes sense.
Well, and I think this is interesting because I think it does bring up the point of, you know, throughout most of human history, art that is being created to be consumed by others has been trending towards eliciting positive emotions. I think for the most part, or at least the negative emotions are tempered by its beauty. So maybe a religious painting is meant to elicit fear of the god, but also the beauty in its creation. Fine.
Well, I mean, also like war painting and like masks that are trying to intimidate your enemy. You know? Again, they could be beautiful in the right context, but if you're the one being faced down by this like, you know, crazy fucking samurai with like the demon mask on about to get your shit chopped off, then you're probably not thinking of it as art in that moment. For you, the samurai probably still thinks it's art.
Yeah. Well, art's confusing.
Well, no, I mean, it is. It's context dependent. I mean, I think all of our discussions so far has made that crystal clear that it's context dependent. And even the most beautiful music in the world could stop being art if it was being played 24/7 to you in a prison cell. You would absolutely hate that music, even if you loved it before, if it was like being used as a sleep deprivation device, you know.
Well, let me ask you a question. So now we understand art is contextual. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I will accept that. And anything can be art, and anything can be interpreted in any way that someone can possibly interpret it.
Yeah. You cut out. You cut out for a sec. I missed the first part of what you said.
Okay. So we've identified that everything is art that can possibly be interpreted as art by any given mm-hmm. person. So as soon as someone identifies something as art, now it's art.
Yeah. I think that's, yeah.
Is the baseline of something being considered art a human's consciousness, or can art exist outside of the conscious human realm? Can something be considered art if it's not interpreted by a human?
No.
Okay. No.
I would say no. I mean, that's just kind of my philosophy in general. I don't think anything that we define as humans, like, really has meaning outside of any human definition. I mean, you know, you can talk about like science and you can talk about objectivity in the way that we measure things and the way that we, you know, the sun, the earth is round, right? Those descriptors all make sense, and it makes sense without the descriptors, but it's still based on a human description. So I would say, without a human lens, everything's art, or nothing is. It's like a Buddhist type thing. It's emptiness and form. It's yin yang. It's all of that and nothing. But as far as like, you can have an experience of beauty and art without calling it art. You can look upon something beautiful and not even think about art and just kind of like enjoy it emotionally without a conscious thought. But at that point, again, I think it's a yin yang. I think it's neither a here nor there. I don't think it really is art or is not art. It just is something that you're experiencing.
What about from the perspective of a bonobo?
Hmm. Oh, no. Now we're getting animal psychology. Animals do have forms of art, though, right? Like, couldn't you argue that animals do things? Like, monkeys like to, like, smear shit with their poop and stuff. And, like, birds build nests. And again, it could be interpreted as art, or it could just be interpreted as, well, no. I mean, I can just say no.
What about from the bonobo? Because I think that what is that talking gorilla? What was that talking gorilla's name?
Yeah, there's a couple different ones.
I think they knew the name Beauty and were able to sign it.
I read some interesting stuff about that not too long ago about those monkeys that could talk.
Uh-huh.
And there was a debate, and I think there was a lot of research that came later on that was trying to disprove that they really even knew what they were saying. It's hard to they were still just saying things to try and get stuff to happen or whatever, like food, like give me that, like I want that. But yeah, they couldn't like string together the next level of logic of like, you know, like forming I don't want to misrepresent it, but because I think it is still an area of some controversy among linguists, but I don't really know if there's any concrete examples of, yeah, like chimps or gorillas knowing what something is without kind of just like pointing at it and like seeing it and calling it by its name, like not remembering like, oh, can you get me like a, you know, like I want, you know, like I know that ducks are birds, and when I see a duck, that's a duck, and then I see another similar bird. I mean, but again, I think we're straying into the realm of like animal consciousness, which is complicated, but I don't think there's any animal that has enough language facility to make this kind of distinction of like, oh, this is art.
Well, let's bring it back to maybe, because if everything can be interpreted by art, that doesn't do anything for our conversation of what is yeah, modern art in particular bullshit comparative to any other type of art form.
Yeah.
So what is the way to measure the value of art? Is it by the strength of its emotional response for specific subgroups or individuals, or is it the potential for emotional response across all people of all backgrounds.
Yeah. I mean, I guess as you're saying, the last thing I say about animals is like, if an animal created something with no like purpose behind it, like I think an animal could create art, but it would be humans that decide if that's art or not. Right.
Okay.
The animal would just be like, that's just something I did, you know, but it's possible there's a level of animal psychology that would challenge that. Anyway, sorry. I mean, I think that anytime you're evaluating art by any criteria, it means that you have to have some goal or objective in mind for that art.
Yes.
And so the way that you create value for different types of art will always depend on what the objective is. Obviously, the politics of modern art and galleries and art collection is weird and complicated. I don't really understand it that well. I don't know how artists build up reputations and get into galleries. And I don't know who decides, you know, to pay this X number of dollars for it because the artist is so famous and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, it's like, if you want to just create art by yourself and not show it to anybody, that's your own personal art. That's totally fine. I think it unfortunately always comes back down to the marketplace. Like, I think market forces will essentially determine the success of art to a certain level.
But divorcing it, its monetary value. So I don't care. Say I don't care about its monetary value. I trust that the galleries are doing it for a profit because they are a business. I trust that collectors are doing it for a profit because it's a business and they're able to interpret it in whatever way they would like to further their own goals financially.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Mm-hmm. How would you agree that all art, all purpose behind art, because you're talking about like, what is the intention behind this? All purpose is to elicit one emotional or temper one emotional response. Or multiple? Or can you have a purely cognitive piece of art? Can you go, this is art because it's purely cognitive, doesn't affect any emotional response?
Well, now we're finally getting down to like the deepest rabbit hole of life, because I think that neuroscience would argue that there's no such thing as cognition without an emotional response. That every thought you think, everything you do, even when you feel as though you're acting very logically, there is still an emotion behind that.
I don't think you would have to be.
Why not?
Because I think you could say theoretically, you were able to, from that study I had sent you previous to this, they were able mm-hmm. to see the differences in the patterns of their brain based on showing some different pieces of art. Some people thought it was gross, some people thought it was cool, whatever. Some people had a higher amount of activity in their prefrontal cortex, making decisions about it. If theoretically you could divorce or eliminate activity in an emotional portion of the brain and do purely cognition,
mm-hmm.
you could interpret something purely cognitively without any sort of eliciting any sort of emotional response. And probably there are people who are more likely to have that naturally, like sociopaths.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if studies have been done on various patients who have like a reduced emotional response or even like the split brain people who are only using one hemisphere of their brain.
Right.
Like, I'm sure a lot of tests could be done, you know, and I think emotion is kind of a hard word to define. But I do think there's a lot of research out that shows that even a seemingly neutral emotional response still counts as an emotional response. The fact that you looked at something and like you kind of were in a neutral emotional state doesn't mean that that doesn't count as an effect of some kind, you know? So, let's do this a different way, since I think the human psychological component of it is complicated. If you were to make a computer, try and write a computer program that could evaluate art. Would it even be possible to do that?
I think it could, but I think it would have to be based on mapping traditional human responses. So I think it could do a good guesstimate of how humans would interpret shapes and color.
Exactly. And I mean, I didn't read that article, but I would push back against anything that tries to measure emotional responses to art if they tried to claim that this proves that this art does this, because again, they were still measuring that art in a specific context, right? I mean, maybe if you measure people,
human experience?
Well, the context of an experiment. I assume that people knew that they were part of an experiment, right? They weren't just like taking people in a gallery and like not telling them that their brains were being scanned, right? You know, I mean, that's the problem with a lot of studies, is that there's an effect of the study. It doesn't matter in certain situations, but I think it matters here, because you're looking at art in a kind of clinical setting and you know that you're part of an experiment. It doesn't mean that there's not valid data, but I would question what the purpose of that data is, really, because I mean, art does exist in a marketplace, and people do tend to gravitate towards art that they like, music that they like, et cetera. Even, you know, you can say a lot of people don't get modern art, but a lot of the same people go to a modern art museum because why not? It's something to do. They pay for a ticket and they go to that art gallery so that they can look at art they don't totally understand. It still exists in a marketplace that people, you know, patronize. You don't have to. I mean, when's the last time you went to an art museum, Thomas?
Last year.
Oh, see? Even you.
Yeah, well, I'm forced to take this position as a part of a debate. I think we're, and perhaps I'm not framing this even correctly, I think to tiptoe around, you know, the value of this, of course, they all exist in a marketplace and you could determine value by whatever people are willing to pay for it in a free market. But divorcing ourselves from the monetary aspect, we have to have an emotional response in order for it to be art, and perhaps to measure its inherent value or its quality of art, I think. So does that mean that marketing or, you know, NSYNC was the best art that was created in the late 90s or the early 2000s, because it affected the most people with the highest level of emotional response over a period of time, and its intention was to be art?
Right. Yeah. And again, I would say if the goal of that art was to do that, I mean, it doesn't necessarily need to be the goal of the art, but if the criteria that you're measuring that art by is how successful it was in, you know, getting teenage girls to like freak out and come to your concerts or whatever, then yes, it succeeded by that metric really, really well. You know, a classical piece, you could say, well, did the audience in the auditorium of the more prestigious, you know, concert hall really enjoy that and have a favorable emotion when they left, even though it's a smaller audience than NSYNC? Then that art, by that metric, did achieve that goal. But if you try to take money out of it entirely, and you try to take the marketplace out of it entirely, I don't know what you'd really be left with. Because even in like some kind of, I don't know, let's say communist utopia where there's no money, there still has to be some mechanism by which art is more widely distributed or less widely distributed. You could take this thought experiment further and say no art can be promoted beyond, I don't know, your local village or whatever. And so the only art you get to see is not like art that's on the radio. It's not art that's like, you know, on TV. It's literally just what your fucking neighbors can do. But then you might be pissed because you're like, there's way better artists in the village way over there. There's no mass way for me to get to it. It's like, in order for art to be popular, does it not need to exist in some kind of marketplace of attention, even if there's no money attached to it, just more people who want to see that piece of art?
Yeah, there's always going to be a limiting of access. But I mean, to continue with your like communist utopia in an Orwellian sense, and when you have like on the television for everyone, television's always on, and they show you a piece of art. Everyone in that society has seen that piece of art, and they can make their own judgments or have their own emotional responses, which can be measured. Like, does that? I am really curious from your perspective if that is the way you interpret the value of art. Like, is it the highest emotional response over the greatest amount of people, similar to what you would have in like a moral argument?
I mean, I think it's hard to measure. I think that's very hard to measure.
Yeah.
like the highest emotional response in the greatest amount of people. But I mean, I think it could be measured to a certain extent. So again, I mean, it sounds like it's kind of like the, you know, it is kind of like moral relativism versus something else where it's like, you know, you can't really say what is good. You can say what people seem to gravitate towards and what they, you know, like, is there a way to get this more specific? Like, if a lot of people view a piece of art, you could argue that if the art becomes popular, it is getting an emotional response. But you mentioned the Orwellian thing, and it's like, you know, there is such a thing as propaganda, whereas people are just forced to see art to make them have a certain emotional response. They don't really have a choice. And if the propaganda is done well enough, then it accomplishes its goal. And art's been used for that in many different contexts. Some people would even argue that there's a element of propaganda to all of popular art. I feel like there's a whole school of thought about this in like I want to say the Frankfurt School. They talked about this of like all the media that we consume is propagandizing us to a certain extent, like mass produced culture and mass media, pop culture. You know, you watch a romance movie, it tells you, it gives you this code of like, this is what a love story is. This is what you want. You see the beautiful car, you're programmed to want it. You know, there's a whole, I mean, that could be a whole separate podcast, honestly, which is a lot of interesting stuff that's been written about it. Which just leads us back to the same thing. It's complicated. Like art is used in so many different ways and contexts. And just because something is popular doesn't mean it has this sort of favorable emotional response that everybody wants to have. It just means that it's popular and it has some emotional response that makes people continue its popularity, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I think to even bring it back to modern art. So, you know, if art is measured by emotional response, positive or negative, and meant to elicit that emotional response across the broadest group possible, if we're to measure with the value of that art without monetary contributions or monetary factors, then sure, modern art fails to be good art in a lot of ways because it's limited in the way that you can elicit emotional response without interpretation, when interpretation is based on those arguments of authority and overall inaccessibility of that art in general. Like, does that not track?
No, I don't think so. I still think that modern art is valid in its context because, again, people are paying to go to museums. I mean, there's a subset of the population who doesn't go to modern art museums because they don't like modern art.
Well, and you said around 76%.
Yeah, something like that. But I think I think that was just the percentage of people who don't. This is an important distinction. I think that was just the percentage of people who claim they don't understand it.
Uh-huh.
I think there's a very valid argument to be made for modern art that some people like going into a gallery and being confused by a piece of art, if for no other reason than bringing it back to my original anecdote, because you're thinking about it later. You might not like it, and you might just be completely confused by it. But it's very possible that the piece that you understood the least is the piece that you continue to think about even after you leave the museum. And I like going to art museums for exactly that reason, because I don't know what I'm going to see. And sometimes I come across a piece of art, I'm like, oh, that's fucking weird. But I enjoy the experience of being in the museum and looking at it in that context. Would that be like a mass marketed piece of art that would start appearing like all over the place, that's like super popular? No, it wouldn't be. It would always exist in that context. But because I'm going to a museum to have a specific type of experience, whether that experience is literally just shaking my head and being like, what the fuck is this? It accomplished that for me. It might accomplish something different for the next person who comes to see it. They might love it. They may hate it, but it did something. And, you know, it doesn't, I don't think you can make the argument that means that modern art is less successful. If the point of modern art is to be in galleries, if the point of a certain piece of modern art is to sell as many prints as possible, so that many people like have like a print of it to put in their house, if that's what they want to do with that art, then you could kind of evaluate it on that metric. But I still think it's equally as valid and as successful in its own right, literally just for being in a gallery and having people come to see it and have whatever response that they have to it.
Okay. So confusion is a confusion is an appropriate and intentional emotional response to the art.
I would say it absolutely can be. It absolutely can be.
Yes. Do you think that is predominant in modern art?
I think that's super hard to say just because there's so much. Modern art encompasses so much different types of art. And I mean, technically speaking, like now we have postmodern art, which is also equally weird and shit, you know. But I mean, the technical definition of modern art, I think ends at a certain, like, I think it ends in like the 70s or something like that. But in the way that we've been using the term of just this kind of style of art that feels like modern art, I don't know. I mean, I think it, again, you have your Jackson Pollock, which everybody knows, one of the most famous American painters ever. And then you have that light turning off and off thing, which I keep mentioning, but who knows how many people really saw that. When I looked it up, it was one of the artist's most famous pieces. You know, there's, do you remember when there's an artist that did like this thing in Times Square where he hung all these like ribbons and things? There's also a lot to be said for like just public art installations in general, where you kind of have no choice but to come across them. And I think it brings us back to the same thing. It's like, you know, they put these public installations in cities and stuff. People might be like, huh, that's cool. Huh, that's weird, you know? But if your question is whether modern art is more or less successful by certain metrics, you can absolutely say that a piece of modern art is less successful by this metric. But there's so many other metrics that you could evaluate it by that it could be vastly, extremely successful by a different metric.
But it has to be successful by a metric in relation to emotional response, thereby triggering an intent of action, right? Like the purchasing of a, like getting the most prints into homes, right, as a potential metric is inherently tied to an emotional response that the viewer might have, mm-hmm. enough so that they actually make a monetary purchase of that product. I guess the thing I have I've trouble with is like when art can be anything that might be ascribed or interpreted as art, and it can also include negative emotions. So confusion might be considered a negative emotion, maybe close to, or even anger, right? Because you talked about eliciting anger. Then we're looking at potentially, you know, school shootings as being art.
Oh, that, Jesus Christ. Podcast over. Podcast
you know, over. Like, so it's a scary thing because now we've invited a whole range of human emotions that are not conducive to human well-being into a form of art that is as valid as any others.
Yeah, well, the school shooting thing.
but by your definition, I mean, how is a school shooting or the Holocaust not art if someone interprets it as art?
You would hope very few people would interpret it as art, but you couldn't stop some people from interpreting it as art. Let me put it that way. Hitler may have viewed the Holocaust as art himself, as well as some of, you know, his Nazi friends, but
yeah.
the marketplace would push against that and make it a tragedy, not art. Let me dial back my position a little
bit. Not by the definition of the Nazis, who could easily become the predominant social and racial like constitution of this
planet.
But
again, that just leads us back to moral relativism, which is such a complicated topic. So according to Sam Harris's definition of like more like universal morality, then no. But according to moral relativism, then yes, for that society, that is, you know, I don't think we can tackle that on this podcast. I'd be happy to do it. Maybe we should do our next one on moral relativism because we both read about it. Just, you know, just an easy little topic for us.
Yeah.
But no, getting back to the issue at hand. So anything can be art to certain people in certain contexts. Yes, I think that we established that's true. But going back to the idea of trying to sell prints or trying to get your art to appear in a forum where it will be viewed by people in any context. Yes, you do need to have the type of emotional response that will allow your art to be presented in a public space. If all you have to do is like suck the dick of the gallery curator, hypothetically, and they'll just put your art in regardless of whether they like the art piece or not. This is an extreme example, but you still had to elicit an emotional response in them to get them to put your art piece in the gallery. By a less crude example, if you want to put a public sculpture up, you're going to have to convince somebody it's a good idea. You're going to have to give somebody a good emotional response. And you would imagine that if the owners of the park or whatever that you're trying to put the sculpture into had a favorable emotional response, you sold them on the idea, you would imagine that at least a certain percentage of the people who come to see the art would also have a favorable emotional response to it, because the idea had, going back to intention, it had some intention behind it that convinced people it was a good idea to present that art. So in order for your art to be displayed to the public, it absolutely needs to have some kind of emotional response that encourages people to do it, I think. And I will grant you that if the response is very, very negative, it would be hard to get that piece into a gallery unless that gallery wants to do something crazy, like chain a dog to the wall of their gallery, or put something really off-putting in their gallery, because they're the type of gallery that likes to put challenging kind of, potentially emotionally negative stuff into their gallery. But you could argue that they had a positive emotional response to the idea of putting a negative type of piece into their gallery. They still wanted to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And probably the positive emotions that you may interpret as a gallery owner to a negative, a piece of art that elicits or is meant to elicit negative emotions is the positive feeling of gaining more revenue and attention to your specific gallery.
Or just doing something unexpected, doing something that seems original and challenging because it hasn't been done as much before.
Perhaps, but wouldn't that just be to garner attention and potential revenue?
Fair enough.
I don't know. I think when we, it's really tough, because I'm having trouble connecting as a layperson the idea that anything is art and everything is just as valid as art, and art is defined as anything created with the intention of eliciting an emotional response. As not saying that some subclasses of art are worse than others, because some are going to be able to be defined as having a not as impactful emotional response across different cultures or different subsects of people. And in the way that modern art seems to not be gotten by most people, it's eliciting less of an emotional response, creating less of an impact, creating less of a call to action than other types of art seems less valid or less good as art.
Well, but that's the problem with saying as art. I mean, again, it's like it can be less valid based on those metrics, but you're still comparing it to something else, to some other potentially more popular form of art.
Yes.
If the goal of art is to be widely distributed and widely appreciated, you can say that. But I don't think you can say that's the goal of art. It's not the goal of all art. It's the goal of some art. There are plenty of artists who don't want to show their art to people. And then there's that whole spectrum we already talked about within that. So sure, art can be less successful according to those metrics, but it can't be less art, if that makes sense. It can't be less art. You can't say this is more art, this is less art. It's all art.
It could be worse art if the metric is to elicit emotional response, right? If that's the intention. But is there a way to define art that is not that?
If you can measure the specific emotional response you want to get in a way that's reliable and objective, I think you could maybe say that, but I think that runs into a lot of problems because emotion and emotional response is so varied in and of itself. It's hard because I do think this comes down to kind of the bullshit. It's not bullshit though. I mean, I think it's just true that art is subjective. And I think that's kind of one of those truths that it's just hard to argue against. But again, you can use objective metrics, but you don't have to do that.
No, but it does seem to me, and I know we're already at like an hour and 24, that there's no way to divorce the value of art from the emotional response elicited by the viewer. Or could someone create, or by the artist, because I guess you could create your own art that elicits your own emotional response, but I guess then you're the viewer at that point.
Right.
There's a little meditation app that my girlfriend uses that like you go through, like you choose the ways you want to feel. It's like in VR. And then it creates this environment. It procedurally generates this environment around you. And it like makes, you know, sometimes you're like floating around like abstract melting fucking colors all around you. And at the end, you measure your emotional state at the beginning. And then you measure your emotional state at the end by way of questionnaire. And I think you could probably do the same to viewing individual pieces of art or a gallery installation as a whole to measure their effectiveness at changing emotional states.
Yeah, I mean, this would surely lead us into a different podcast topic because it's very complicated in and of itself. But I personally have a lot of issues with anything that tries to measure emotional states in the way you were just describing. I think it can work. I think people can get stuff out of it. But, you know, I'm not a fan of the kind of the new trend in like biometrics and like, oh, you were kind of agitated around this time of the day. Like you know, you wear your bracelet and it tells you all the ways you were feeling throughout the day. And like, I mean, maybe I'm just scared of it. Maybe that's kind of like the future we're heading into, but I personally have a lot of issues with anything that tries to like objectify your emotions and your emotional response to things throughout the day. Not that it can't be done. And I know that it can be done and you can get meaningful data out of it, but I just personally have a lot of issues with that kind of emerging trend. And I think there's a lot of potential problems with that.
Okay. Well, we can put that on the docket for a new one. Since we've gone about an hour and a half, and I think that's probably where we want to cap these so people don't kill us.
I'll assume people will actually make it this far, but yeah.
Right, yeah. Well, you will when you're editing. I'd like to start off with stuff that I've learned from today. I don't know if this is a good way to like cap these off, but I've learned a lot because I don't know
about
art.
Fair enough.
So, you know, this has made me challenge my beliefs about what art is, and I think how art can be interpreted as art and what the artist's intention means to the end viewer. Mm-hmm. I still have sticking points around emotion responses when it comes to modern art. I think it can be very powerful, more powerful than representative art, whatever that actual word is. But in the way that I still feel like as an art form, this is not as good as written word to describe complex ideas. This is going to make me think probably the rest of the night about what art is, what I interpret as art, and why I interpret it as art. So this has been really interesting for me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great conversation. And I mean, to what you were saying before, it's like, I think much smarter people and philosophers than us have written about this at length.
Right.
So I'm sure there's a lot more literature on the subject. Maybe that can be one of our goals for these, to make people curious enough to go find smarter people to listen to about these topics who have thought about it a little bit more in depth. But I do think what's interesting that could, I imagine will be a topic we approach in other podcasts is because the question kind of revolves around objectivity and subjectivity and relativism when it comes to sort of evaluating any phenomenon in the world, that even when you're talking about something as art, you know, you're still getting into these questions of what role can objectivity play? And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of critiques out there of postmodernism that say that it's too much in the camp of everything is art and everything goes and every human experience is equally valid. And a lot of philosophers have debated that. So I think it would be interesting to kind of come back to that from a different perspective. And the last thing I will say, since I kind of stuck to my guns through most of this, but I want to say that, I mean, I definitely do think there can be modern art. I'm going to stop short of saying bad, because I think that opens back up the doors of like this sort of relativistic what's good, what's bad. But I think there can be definitely modern art that fails in accomplishing what the artist set out to do, fails in engaging people when they see it, and of course, fails in ever appearing in a gallery because it's just not a piece of art that anybody's interested in. So it's not to say that all art, modern art, is just great by virtue of being abstract and weird. There can absolutely be modern art that just doesn't succeed by a lot of different metrics. Maybe the artist is still okay with it, but I'm sure there's plenty of modern artists who are disappointed that they weren't able to create a piece of modern art that was, you know, elicited a better emotional response, and by virtue of that became more popular, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There can absolutely be modern art that doesn't accomplish very much. If you're happy with that, more power to you. But I think a lot of artists, to be fair, want their art to succeed. And by that metric, you do have to start getting into emotional responses and sort of the marketplace of ideas, you know.
Nice. Well, I think that wraps it up for our podcast today. I'm psyched for the next topic, whereby maybe I'll have a better shot at changing minds. But I'm psyched to see if we get more than 16 downloads for this one.
Surely 20 is in our future.
Cool. Well, sign off, guys. We'll catch you in the next episode.